Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 16th of January, 2020. On the podcast today, Charles Bray, chairman of East Inco Mining and Exploration. That's EM.P. And Charles explains the reason for the recent name change and discusses their operational progress. Also on the podcast, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, talks about results from Whitbread, John Wood Group, and Halfords. Also, as always, I have two very important lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can check out top 10 versions of both these lists at VoxMarkets.co.uk. And most followed is important because people are following these companies because they like what's going on there. And it's almost a measure of attention, research, money flow. So check it out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Charles Bray, Executive Chairman of East Inco Mining Annex Exploration. That's EME or EM.P on the next day. Charles, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me again. It's wonderful to be back.
Yes, first of all, before we get into why you changed the name and how operations are progressing there, just give us, you know, or the listeners, if they're not quite familiar because you've not been around that long, just give us a summary as to what the company's all about, please, Charles.
Yes, East Inco is an investment company listed on the NEX exchange, and we are investing in mineral resource companies in Africa. In particular, we have invested in a subsidiary company called East Inco, and this is a Rwandan-based tantalum play. And our mandate at this point is to joint venture with small artisanal miners, take over the mine site, one that's already been proven to be profitable and producing and have resource, and to mechanize and implement health and safety rules and regulations to make it more efficient and safe.
Yeah. Okay. So you've gone from the name change. Let's deal with the name change. So Equatorial Mining going into East Inco. So what's the reason for that then, Charles?
I think that the primary reason relates to the fact that we have new management. The new management has refocused the company from Nigerian coal to Rwanda in particular, but we are looking abroad. And we're refocusing the company to focus more on tin, tantalum, and tungsten. These three T's are predominant in that particular area around Rwanda, along that whole belt through Congo, all the way down through into South Africa. But primarily, we have new management team, we have new shareholders, new capital, and we feel that our prospects have just changed, and it's been time to rename the company and take things forward in a different direction.
Yeah, and so tell us where you are at the moment then with the company.
Yes, we, following the name change, we've also instituted a share consolidation. So formerly 100 shares, 100 ordinary shares is now one new ordinary share of 1p. This is just to clean things up a little bit, as well to allow our existing share or our new shareholders, I should say, to have a reasonable number of shares in their holdings. And from an operational standpoint, we are focused on Quokka. That's the original site that I've mentioned in a previous podcast. That is on the shores of Lake Kivu in western Rwanda. There we have been purchasing heavy yellow equipment as well as a wash plant. That is due to become operational sometime in Q1 2020. This is a bit behind schedule, unfortunately, but things are progressing on that development, and we're excited about processing ore and getting levels that we anticipate to be approximately 5 times production that was previously there.
And so, when are you hoping to do this, time frame wise?
Yes, we anticipate that the wash plant should be fully operational by the end of Q1 at the latest, hopefully a few weeks earlier, but that should be it. We had some delays with some equipment coming out of China. There were some holidays relating to some sporting events, and shipping was delayed out of our plant. Excusing that, we're happy with how things are progressing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I notice you've been putting your hand in your pocket and buying some shares yourself.
Yeah, I had to dip a little bit into the pocket, but it's always a good thing to be able to support the shares. I was able to buy a small amount and looking forward to increasing that holding over the course of the next 6 to 12 months.
Marvelous stuff. Okay, Charles. Well, I'm going to ask you for 3 reasons. And if someone is listening right now and likes the sound of what you're doing but are not following the story as yet, three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Yes, I think incredibly exciting for me as the executive chairman is to watch our progress and to see how a site can go from an artisanal pick and shovel site to one that is mechanized with heavy yellow equipment and a 20 to 30 ton per hour wash plant. So it's really exciting to watch a transformation from something that is relatively antiquated to mechanized. So one, I think that we have the right equipment in the right site. So from that standpoint, we should be generating good revenue relatively quickly. Number two, we have cleaned up the shareholding. We have a great shareholding, a group of shareholders, shareholding base. So those are active shareholders who I deal with on a daily basis, who follow the company, are inquisitive and curious and supportive, most importantly. And number three, we're expanding. So we are having some discussions to enter into new joint ventures or to get involved in other sites, whether that's in Rwanda or outside of the country. And that bodes very well for our prospects as well.
Excellent stuff. Charles, good to chat to you. And like I said, hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
I hope so too. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me in the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You're a Chris.
Good, thanks. Very good.
Now, we've had some news and some stuff coming out from lots of sort of retail companies of late. So what have we got today, bigger cap-wise? Who's reporting?
Yeah, it's an absolute frenzy today. It's that mid-January kind of post-Christmas, New Year, where are we now sort of trading update thing. Got to start with the trading update from Whitbread. Now, Whitbread, obviously, a year ago, they sold Costa to Coca-Cola for a tidy sum. Mm-hmm. All they're left basically now is the Premier Inn business. And it's kind of interesting because, and a few companies have sort of said similar sort of things. It does seem Whitbread reporting their quarter three, which obviously ended late last year, they said, look, clearly be it the pre-political, pre-election kind of uncertainty, maybe that's wrapped up with Brexit, who knows, did impact their business. Accommodation like-for-like sales in the UK were slightly down. They made a small advance in their like-for-like sales at Premier Inn because of food. You know, back to old school stuff, obviously they have a lot of restaurants and everything else integrated with their facilities, with their hotels. So the food bit was slightly positive. The hotel bit was slightly negative in the UK. And bigger-wise, the only reason they actually had a 1% rise in like-for-like quarter three sales was actually helped out by the burgeoning German business, where they're continuing to open new hotels. As we've talked about before, Germany is actually behind the times. You know, the UK is a market leader in these sort of smart, but still budget three-star hotels. Germany still has obviously all the top-end stuff, but then a whole load of mom-and-pop sort of B&B type things. So Premier Inn see a huge opportunity in Germany. They're still pushing out there. That's still growing. UK a bit shabby, but the food side a bit better. Overall, I would say that they're sort of still talking a cautious game for 2020 and beyond in their comments. But I observe Premier Inn, great brand, still in terms of the surveys and everything else, massively outpointing all their peers and competitors. Very geared clearly towards the UK economy and how things are going, whether business or domestic general travellers are running around the country or not. But I have to say, in my opinion, a good business. And you know, this sort of market cap and share price, you know, I say to myself, the potential for one of those really big hotel chains who actually see that, you know, a business which is focused on the UK and Germany is actually in the budget hotels, but it's actually quite a good medium-term play. I do actually speculatively still wonder whether this one won't be with us in a year's time. But we'll see. We'll see. Shares are down. I think they fell a bit more early doors. I think they were down about 3% when I last looked. Shares in sort of the mid-40s. But yeah, responding to some of that kind of implied sort of Brexit uncertainty and slightly cautious outlook statement, but still overall net positive.
Yeah. What I find interesting is yesterday the inflation figure came out. It was at a three-year low and at 1.3%. And a lot of that was blamed on apparently cheap hotel prices, which is interesting, and for the last quarter there.
Yes. Yes, that's right. I mean, I think just judging by my inbox, I mean, I use Premier Inn now and again for business and leisure, and certainly they haven't been shy about punching out the odd email or 10, sort of saying we've got this sale on or that sale on, etc. I would say though, this is where their continued kind of like investment in their business really helps, because certain of their competitors, which I won't name directly, but you know, some of the ones which people kind of think about in the same sort of ilk, you know, if you go there, if you look at the hotels, they're not sort of being as consistent in putting the money in, keeping the facilities sharp and related, refurbed. So I think some of those players have really heavily discounted. And as a consequence, short term, they may have got a bit of revenue and, as you say, impacted the inflation stats. But I think medium term, Premier Inn's in a good position because actually well-respected brand, investing back into the business. You know, this is a classic sort of medium-term investment sort of thing you do, and ultimately is rewarded by the stock market. So there you go.
Yeah, but do you know what? I'm on the email list for Travelodge. I don't know why that is, but they've been sending me quite a few emails over Christmas, and it starts off with something like 10,000 rooms at £15, and then they got, you know, 15,000 rooms at £10, 20,000 rooms at £5. I don't need 20,000 rooms. I need one room if it's possible. You know. But
when you have 50,000 at free, then you've got to worry about their business.
Exactly.
But you know, they are a classic, though, I have to say. Travelodge, you know, they're owned by private equity, but they have improved their numbers, judging by the sort of the disclosures I see. But when you go there, it's a night and day experience, just in my opinion, versus Premier Inn. Premier Inn's a slightly firmer price point, a little bit more, but my goodness, does it feel better, more plush, more attractive when you get there, in my opinion.
Yeah. Do you know what, looking at the chart of Whitbread, it's very interesting because they obviously during news they seem to either, you know, exceed or disappoint, because it's just full of gaps.
That's right.
Every quarter there's like a big gap in the chart.
It is. That's right, it is. And it's obviously quite a heavy share, you know, 45 odd quid. It's a heavy share. And it does. You're absolutely right, Justin. It moves kind of 5-8% without thinking about it. And obviously, 5-8% is a number of quid in terms of share price equivalent. So, yes, you'll note too, for the for the technical boys, you'll note too the resistance at 50 quid, but you'll note the support at 40 quid. And, you know, hence at 45-ish, you know, it's somewhere in the middle. It's kind of comme ci, comme ça, but yeah.
Okay, cool. What's next, Chris?
Well, got to think about John Wood in the oil services space.
Wow, up 7%.
Yeah, well, again, I mean, oil services is renowned for its kind of ups and downs and whatever else. We all know that it's interlinked with the CapEx plans of large cap oil. That's totally expected and reasonable. And clearly, if you look at the John Wood share price over the last year or so, it's kind of come down from sort of five, six quid down. I think it dropped to like £3, if I recall, or somewhere close to £3. And today it's flirting with moving back through £4. So it's been up and down, certainly interlinked with thoughts about the global economy and the oil price and everything else. What they've said today is actually, it's relatively boring. They've said, look, revenue is about flat year on year, but profits are a touch higher. Their cost cutting, their disposals, their deleveraging continues. People may, listeners may recall that they bought AMEC or the business that became historically was AMEC, and then that was bought by somebody else and whatever else. They bought all of those exposures a couple of years ago, I think, which looked like a smart move. The only thing they need is really large cap oil, particularly, although they have a broader offering, some renewables, some broader sort of clean energy and general industrial exposures too. They need those people to start spending money. And you haven't seen that yet. But I have to say, the statement today from Wood Group was all right, because they're deleveraging, they're generating cash, they're making a few disposals, they're running it tightly. That's all you need to hear. And I'm not surprised to see the share squeeze up today. My gut feel would be that they actually are in a bit of a sweet spot over the next couple of years. You know, oil price is hard to predict, clearly, but my observation is, and I think we'll see it when large cap oil starts to report over the next little while, that those boys have got to start investing, otherwise they are not going to be growing those businesses. Now, clearly oil and gas is controversial in this Greta Thunberg influence world, and quite rightly so, that people are debating the longevity of it and everything else. But shorter term, i.e. in the oil industry, the next 10 or 20 years, we're still going to see them looking to find new fields and everything else. And hence, I think they've got to start investing. And that will benefit people like John Wood. So my view for 2020 on this stock is I do think it's a buy, but it's clearly at a higher risk point, just because it is a supply to a volatile and influenced by many events sort of industry.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? It's in 2017, at the start of that year, they topped out at £9, and you're right. Most recently, December, they hit £3.10. But it's quite early doors, but I quite like this chart action here. I don't know if we've seen a bottom. It's too early to call yet, but it's looking promising, because it's like the 310, it bounces to a 410 and it's come back a little bit. But maybe that's the bottom. Who knows? I mean, but you've got to have...
Yeah.
And the problem is, like you say, sentiment. I mean, I thought it was quite telling that BlackRock, you know, today, which is the world's largest fund manager, a couple of days back, I've mentioned now they're going towards more sustainable, and they will cut the companies that derive a quarter or more of their revenues from thermal coal. So it's coal, of course, but it's getting lumped together, kind of thing, isn't it? Sort of fossil fuels and all that stuff. So they'll
lumped
double
together. Very good.
Yeah, they're doubling the number of sustainably focused exchange traded funds, they're getting rid of obviously fossil fuel funds. So when you've got the biggest fund manager doing that, it's a direction of travel, isn't it? You know.
Yes, that's right. And we've seen the rise of ESG, you know, environmental and socially governance-centric funds. Yeah, that's been a massive growth area in the fund management industry. The question is, for me, when I look at the energy space and the general commodities-facing space, it's very out of favour. If you look at fund manager allocations, it's had a rotten old time, generally speaking, over the last little while in terms of performance. And as you say, we're facing all these structural issues, which ultimately could well impact their propensity or ability to sustain dividends and everything else, and hence there may be a longer term bear here. I have to say, though, if I look at the energy stats space in terms of the sort of the inputs needed to keep the world moving forward. Short term, we're not going to be moving away from sort of fossil fuel centric areas for a little while. Clearly renewables are growing, but there's still a big game and a big incumbent base for the fossil fuels, and that's the still sort of, if you like, residual opportunity for the bigger oil and gas names. That's why they should still be interested in growing their potential and capability, and hence these services companies still have somebody to sell into. However, John Wood is a bit broader. I think they realise it. They've got broader engineering and alternative industry capabilities. But yeah, no doubt, oil and gas services and related spend is going to be super critical for them over the next year. You know, but what they're saying is expectations are low and they're keeping their business tight as a consequence, and that's the right response. So it's finding that equilibrium, isn't it, between that sort of £9 a couple of years ago and £3 in the dog days of late last year. You know, it's not as simple as putting a number in the middle, but my feeling is a fairer value probably has, let's say, a 5 in front of it strategically rather than maybe a 4.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. Yeah, and it's just a case of, you know, sentiment on fossil fuels are way ahead of the reality, you know, of how much we still need them, you know, and so you're right.
Right.
I think
right.
We'll see a bounce here. People thinking, hang on, these are very, very cheap here, and so we'll probably see that sooner or later. Okay, anything else there, John?
Well, come on, Chris, on Halfords.
When I say John, it's going to be John Wood then, sorry.
A quick one on Halfords, which is has had an absolute shocker, as per many other retail operators over the last little while. They're going through yet another turnaround plan from the no longer newish CEO. I think he's been there 18 months plus. I have to say though, today's statement is a touch better. You know, I bashed the company before in the summer and the autumn, and the shares are down since then. But today's statement, shares are up 4-5% when I last looked. Mm-hmm. It is a bit better. You know, they're talking about some growth. It's helped, no doubt, by some easy comps in areas such as cycling, which went a bit out of favour. They seem to have sort of found a more happy medium in the kind of the late autumn, early winter period there. Some of the auto centres have done a bit better. And they've reiterated their profits forecast for the next full year, which, you know, was cut 6 months ago and certainly has impacted the shares in the interim period. So a bit of stabilisation, you know, what in a turnaround, what you tend to see is initially lousy numbers and then slightly better, where they're sort of maintaining expectations and stuff like that. And then, of course, the next phase is they potentially beat them or start to advance. We're not at that stage yet. We're at that second stage. They're meeting numbers. They're reiterating them. They're reiterating the lowered numbers. The statement is just a trading update. There's nothing on dividends, which is the dividend is still a big story at Halfords, big old dividend there. Nothing on the balance sheet per se. Just sort of sales comments and then just this line about profit expectations for the full year. So, you know, still more work to be done. I have to say, though, I do wonder whether they are forming a base at this circa 150 pence level, and one to watch, I would say. Or maybe even I might pop down there at the weekend, just check out what I think on the ground, so to speak.
Well, I went to Halfords about 2 weeks ago with the kids, and I don't know what I went there for now, but they've done it. They've really opened the store out. I feel sorry for them. Every time I go to Halfords, and I haven't cycled for a while now because I used to cycle into work, but I work from home now. But I mean, they're always very helpful, always very nice, always polite, couldn't enough for me. And so I feel sorry for them that it's not sort of coming through, because I genuinely find the customer service very good. And so pre-tax profit in the range of 50 to 55 million. What are they, 340 million at value at the moment? So I don't know what debt they have. But they've opened the store up. It's more open. They've taken down the height of the sort of aisles, and it seems like a more open sort of airy sort of space. It looks quite modern. It's quite nice. It seems less in there, but there's still lots in there. But only 300 million their market, they're valued at 300 million.
So yeah, no, that's right. So yeah, it's sort of single digit earnings multiple, decent dividend yield. And I think in terms of a brand, you're right, there is something there. You know, not all of their business can naturally gravitate to the internet. I think, you know, they've clearly been impacted a bit by that. They can do their own capabilities there, but most of the stuff in Halfords, auto, cycling, whatever, you go in there and you physically get it and stuff like that. And so I think there might be a market still there for them. But as always, is it in a difficult consumer spending space, that there's always uncertainty. Yeah, I'm watching this one. I've kind of evolved my views from being cautious last year. I kind of feel the shares are sort of, you know, at a more sensible level now. And the tone of the update today tells me they're in that phase two of the turnaround. Will phase three come where actually they say, right, you know, actually we're going to expect profits to start to go up now and things are going to get a little bit better. And obviously that will be consistent with the shares slightly going up because the multiples go up a little bit and stuff like that. So, yeah, one to watch, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I don't want them to be the next sort of high street, you know, victim or sort of fatality or casualty, you know, where. But I don't see why they should, because if you look at it at the moment, what's happened to it? The only rivals they had was like sort of big rivals, it was Evans Cycles, but they didn't go the right way. There's no reason why they can't dominate online. You know, why can't they? I don't understand why. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think it's a good brand, and I think there's a bit more longevity there potentially than other things. Certainly than from some sort of Me Too clothing retailer or something like that. And the supermarkets impinge, but you know, are they going to crush them? Probably not. And as I said, things like debt and whatever is not an issue at Halfords. So they've got a solid balance sheet. So cool. On that sense, we'll see.
Well, I mean, and I put them on my watch list, Chris, and I quite like that on the chart there, because I quite like that. I think there could be a turnaround. And let's be honest, you know, cycling, it's future proof, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, no, it should be. Well, in thematically, it should be well attuned to this sort of lovely, dovey, cuddly, sort of environmentally friendly world, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
Apart from those horrible things like car drivers, I think cycling's great.
Yeah, but they're also service cars, so they're fine. They're both covered.
They're integrated, indeed.
Yeah, marvellous stuff, Chris. Thanks for that, and we'll speak to you next week.
Sounds fun. See you then.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Polarian Imaging, some big volume going through the day, up 3.7%. The average daily volume is about 230,000 shares. Volume today is 4.3 million. Of course, we're expecting a top-line readout on their clinical phase 3 trials, which is expected to be positive. And we're getting close to that. It's happening this month. So any time this month. Could drop tomorrow. Who knows? Could drop at the end of the month. Who knows? Well, some people know, but I don't know, of course, and most private investors don't know. I say most, probably all. Okay, at four, Open Orphan, up again today, 1.13%, 6.7525 pence is a thing there. Okay, at the share price, at three, Augean, I think it is, Augean, AUG is ticker there, up half of 1%, really, to 213. At two, Amino Technologies, no mover there, 143.5 pence. Amino Technologies, the AMO's ticker. And number one most followed company is Dekel AgriVision. And that's no move again, 3.4 pence. Okay, it's time for the top five most liked RNSs. At five, it is Ariana Resources, Q4 2019 preliminary production results. At three, a similar group, exercise of warrants. At three, that was at four. I'm sorry, I'm all over the place today. At three, Shanda Gold, Q4 2019 production and operational update. At two, Petrofac Limited. Petrofac appointed for wind farm substations. And number one, some decent figures here, Cora Gold, scoping study, 84% IRR at $1,400 gold price. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.